Hey, Red, you won't believe the morning I had. I just fought off an entire horde of ninjas. Red? Hey, look, someone's writing characters based on antiquated stereotypes rather than personal experience. Huh, guess she's not here after all. Where on earth is she? Huh, what's with all these notes conspicuously scattered on the floor? Oh, this better not be an apocalypse log. Oh, no, it's just trope notes. The hero's journey. Well, let's give it a shot. Can't hurt to try. So, the hero's journey as a codified concept was initially coined by Joseph Campbell in his 1949 book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. After examining a large number of stories and myths from various cultures around the world, Campbell analyzed the common threads he recognized and came to the conclusion that he had identified the fundamental components of the archetypal hero's journey. The idea is that this formula, this monomyth, as he confidently calls it, covers everything from Gilgamesh and the Buddha all the way up to modern day, and can be identified in a large number of stories in between. Now, while it's cool that so many different stories share common threads, which you may note is the definition of a trope in the first place, Campbell went a little overboard on trying to apply the rule to absolutely everything and assert that it was the only way hero stories can be told. But, of course, no trope is omnipotent, and it's impossible to come to one formula for how all stories since forever have been written. For our purposes, let's take a less cavalier approach. The hero's journey is not a trope that all stories do or should follow as a strict formula, but rather, the trope works best when it serves as a lens through which to view and analyze a story. Think of it as a more detailed version of a three-act structure. There's no mandate that anyone has to write that way, but knowing about it and understanding how it works lets you analyze the story from this perspective, and potentially identify interesting story components you might have otherwise overlooked. And also, like all lenses, you need to make sure that you're not using it to view stuff that doesn't fit. Not all stories are hero's journeys, and in some cases, looking at a story through the lens of a hero's journey will obscure your view of the parts of the story that don't easily fall into its categories. Trope responsibly, kids. So before the hero's journey was the thing that all the cool heroes were allegedly doing, the term for the general leave the ordinary world to have an adventure myth was the medicine journey, a concept observed in worldwide examples of shamanism by University of Chicago professor Mircea Eliade, who wrote a few books on the subject. The medicine journey serves as the structural foundation of the hero's journey, with all the other bits basically added in by Campbell for specificity later. The basic structure of the medicine journey is the following. A problem exists for which there is no solution within our ordinary understanding of the world, like our starting culture. So, the protagonist must travel elsewhere to find the solution, and eventually they return with the solution to the problem. For instance, the journey to the West is a medicine journey where the problem is evil and suffering and the solution is enlightenment, the West being the elsewhere trip Taka and friends have to travel to. So the hero's journey heavily reflects that original structure of leave, find solution, come back. So Campbell's trope takes the three-part structure of 1, departure, where the hero leaves the familiar world, 2, initiation, where the hero navigates the unfamiliar world, otherwise known as the world of adventure, and 3, return, where the hero, well, returns to the familiar world, usually bringing along the stuff they went to the unfamiliar world for in the first place. Otherwise, you'd have a problem. Campbell's first major alteration to this trope was to install the hero archetype as the protagonist. The medicine journey could have any type of protagonist whatsoever with literally zero caveats. It could be a group, a child, a squishy human monk with his four monster friends, you name it. By contrast, hero is a much narrower characterization, and it comes with a decent amount of narrative baggage too, so we can already see how Campbell is starting to narrow it in here. From there, Campbell developed a highly specific and detailed model of the fundamental hero's journey, adding a large number of secondary story elements he observed frequently augmenting the general medicine journey structure. He was also using it to try and make sweeping assessments of humanity as a whole, which is never a good sign in literary analysis. The problem is that the trope as he outlined it was way too specific and didn't really apply to all that many things. So as a result, it isn't all that useful even as an analytical tool, unless you're willing to flagrantly abuse and squish around the text you're trying to analyze to fit it exactly. Which, please, don't do that. It makes writers very sad. So since then, a lot of people have made their own versions of the model to the point where no two sources on it will fully agree with one another, stripping away a lot of the faff to make it more inclusive and more useful to understand. The general rule of thumb nowadays is that a lot of stories fit some of the components of the hero's journey, but it's meant to be flexible, and there shouldn't be pressure to force a story to fit it. Again, it's not a recipe, it's there to help us understand story structure. A lot of writers have serious beef with this trope when taken as mandate because their critics tell them their story needs to fit the hero's journey, which is as needlessly annoying as any, "Oh man, you gotta do this trope" complaint. So we gotta tread carefully. Okay, so with the origins and several disclaimers out of the way, here is the modern consensus of what, approximately, a hero's journey looks like. Stage 1 is the ordinary world. This is the hero's starting point. It's usually familiar to the audience and definitely familiar to the hero. The purpose of the ordinary world is to give us a status quo to start from, and to get your audience personally invested in the comfort the ordinary world provides so the impact of leaving it is strengthened later on. As an optional bonus, your hero can be comfortable with their life here, but really yearning for something more, foreshadowing the inevitable onset of plot. Next, they get the call to adventure, where the hero learns that they might need to do something out of the ordinary in order to save their familiar world. This stage is sometimes accompanied by a mentor character, your Gandalfs and Obi-Wans, but sometimes they show up later to guide the hero through the unfamiliar world instead. This part is identifiable in the original medicine journey structure as the moment your protagonist realizes there's a problem that they can't solve internally. The next step, the refusal of the call, is where the hero doesn't want to go on an adventure and is narratively punished for this. Typically, their ordinary world is damaged in some way as a result of their refusal to act, so the hero then recognizes that they need to go on the journey, even if it's still semi-reluctant. If you have a gruff but fair father figure in your ordinary world, the narrative punishment is usually this dude getting Uncle Ben. The refusal is actually semi-optional even in this structure, because sometimes heroes are all about adventure and jump at the opportunity instead. Again, it's flexible. Stage 4 is when the hero crosses the first threshold into the unfamiliar world, and the story really gets going. Here, the hero makes a conscious and irreversible decision to go on the adventure and crosses through some physical threshold that signifies that. Sometimes there are threshold guardians to test the hero, but that's optional. If you're dealing with something like urban fantasy where the natural world is the world of adventure, the first threshold is usually the moment where the hero gains the power to see the more adventurous underside of the ordinary world, or is introduced to the secret world and as the urban fantasy rules explains to them. In the next step, the realm of adventure, the hero learns how to navigate a world totally different from the ordinary world they started in. Sometimes this involves nifty loot, friends and allies, convenient mentors, etc. This is usually a very large portion of the story because it's fun and that's what we're all here for. Also, sometimes this part of the story has the hero find or at least figure out the solution to the initial problem that they're here to solve, making the problem getting the solution back to the ordinary world. Okay, so this next stage is often the most misunderstood. In a lot of cases, it's shoehorned in right before or even during the final fight with the big bad, which really doesn't do it justice. This section is usually called the belly of the whale, named after that very moment in the story of Jonah. It's where the hero descends into an abyss or, in one way or another, goes down and undergoes a psychological trial during their darkest hour. In the classical Greek and Roman tradition, this part of the story is known as the catabasis, literally going down, and usually constitutes a trip to the underworld. Here, the physical symbolism of descent is meant to clue the reader into what's going on thematically inside the hero's head. Anyway, here the hero has to face and overcome their inner demons, and they emerge as a stronger and better person for it. Now, to be clear, the hero doesn't need to be in any physical danger for this portion of the story to be effective, and it can even be more effective when the danger is explicitly coming from inside the hero instead. It's essentially the mental, internal climax of the story, and it prepares the hero for the trials to come. Sometimes this is phrased as rebirth, since the hero is different when they emerge from the whale, but I personally find that this implies too much of a physical component, which just gets confusing. The key purpose of this stage is that the hero undergoes character development. In any case, this is a major turning point in the hero's journey, and usually marks the point where the hero is fully committed to the adventure and prepared for the dangers ahead. Stage 7 is the road of trials, the path out of the belly of the whale. Usually this part coincides with the appearance of a lot of tests, allies, and enemies. This usually includes a temptation to leave your quest test where the hero is tempted to abandon their journey. Campbell's version calls this the woman as temptress and gives it an entire section, but since that notion is more than a little antiquated, most people agree that any form of temptation, be it money, power, lust, or even just a good night's sleep, will do the trick. The Road of Trials is also frequently a large part of the story because, again, it's fun, and it's also really cool because since the hero has escaped the Abyss, you get to see your hero as a full hero with their act together now. Stages 5 through 7 can be seen as one contiguous act since it's usually quite long and makes up most of the meat of the actual adventuring. Your hero's having wacky trials in Adventureland. What more do you need? The next stage is the pre-showdown breather, where you're coming up on the final confrontation against the physical or metaphorical big bad, so your hero or heroes take a quiet moment to reminisce. This one is also optional because sometimes you just straight up don't get that minute to breathe. Such is life. This gives your writer the chance to show off the humanity of the characters involved, which actually exposes some of the difficulties caused by the hero's journey, since ideally you don't need a designated chapter to remind your readers that these characters are fully developed characters. Usually you want that to be on full display for most of the story, but the hero's journey is a plot-driven structure which can easily supersede the unique characterization of the characters involved. The next stage is the climax of the story, and it can come in at least one of three flavors: the final showdown, the apotheosis, and the ultimate boon. And most stories will just put two or more of these together in some capacity, because that just gives you more options. The most standard version of this is the final showdown, where the hero fights an overwhelmingly powerful enemy and the hero then defeats the big bad, frequently through some form of self-sacrifice. In the apotheosis, which is Greek for the elevation to godhood, the hero comes to view the world in a radically different way due to some revelation or received knowledge. Either that or they get a new power. Finally, there's the ultimate boon, where the hero attains their final reward which they've been seeking all along. Sometimes there's a final temptation to overcome first, but again, optional. In a lot of our media today, the climax to an adventure story almost always includes some big fight, but there are a lot more ways to go about writing a narrative climax that get brushed aside because, honestly, they're just more difficult and people are lazy. But their rarity makes reading a good non-fight climax more rewarding. What kind of climax your story ultimately has depends in large part on what kind of story you're trying to tell and what you want the reader to see as valuable. Whether that's a heightened knowledge of the world, victory over the forces of evil, or some gift that will make the ordinary world a better place is all up to you. After the climax, we get stages 10 through 12, which all happen in fairly quick succession. The first of which is the return, where the hero's all done with the adventure and needs to start heading home. This can be a high-octane chase or a slow, sedate, and contemplative journey back. Next, the hero crosses the return threshold and makes it back into the ordinary world. Lastly, there's the final reward, the hero's happy ending. Here, the hero is back in the ordinary world, and not only is the hero a better and stronger person for their journey, but the world itself has usually been improved in some way as well. This sometimes gets coded as the hero returning with an elixir, which is of course taken directly from the medicine journey, where this is the part where the protagonists return to the world with the solution to the problem that sent them on the journey in the first place. So that's pretty much the hero's journey, and while I doubt there are too many stories that tick all the checkboxes, I'm sure you recognized a few of these stages from at least a handful of stories. It's not a one-size-fits-all guide to how to write the perfect story, because if you wrote a story that exactly follows this, it would feel ridiculously generic, but there are a lot of useful components to be found here if we look at the stages in isolation. For example, the ordinary world is super useful because it establishes a comfortable status quo that your audience and hero will want to return to. When that world is threatened, you can discuss the visceral discomfort of a disrupted status quo, and a story that takes place in that zone of discomfort will be by necessity uncomfortable for your audience, who will be waiting with bated breath for things to be fixed. Also, because you establish it is comfortable and familiar for your hero, your audience will potentially empathize with this and feel similarly driven to protect it when it comes under fire. The refusal of the call is useful because it addresses the fact that most adventure is dangerous and scary. See, most real-life endeavors or adventures, like activism, public performance, or just anything where it feels like there's stuff to lose, are frequently undesirable until and unless they become highly personal to the active party. So the feeling of being pulled between the desire to do the right thing and the fear of the possible consequences is relatable for most of your audience. Overall, this stage establishes that your character isn't just a vehicle for the plot and isn't necessarily a willing participant in your story. But note that this stage isn't always necessary and can sometimes feel like a disingenuous token protest, and oh, I couldn't possibly, from the hero before the plot really gets going. The Realm of Adventure has one major thing going for it. It's different. That's a very useful starting point, and because you establish that your hero starts in a familiar, ordinary world, you can show off this new, fancy world to your audience as much as you like, since they'll be just as clueless about it as your heroes will be. You can display your world building for all to see, which is convenient if you're an especially enthusiastic world builder. This works as a contrast with the ordinary world, and can't function without it, since without the ordinary world, the realm of adventure is just a world. Establishing its difference from the norm lets you explore it fully without this feeling like a contrived info dump. The belly of the whale is interesting because challenging your heroes is good. Doing that physically is fine, but challenging them mentally is frequently more interesting, usually because it has a more uncertain outcome. From a meta perspective, most heroes can't really afford to lose a physical fight if death is a possible outcome, but your heroes can absolutely fail a mental trial. The only consequence is their mental health and well-being. That means angst, as well as tons of opportunities for character development. Your hero emerges from the belly of the whale when they finally succeeded in their mental task, but this doesn't necessarily have to be easy or quick, and they can even have adventures while still super messed up. Sometimes the belly of the whale is more of a state of mind than it is a physical location. The pre-showdown banter lets your heroes chill a bit, which is good, because we always have to remember that these characters are human. Again, it's easy to get caught up in the story you want to tell and the adventure you want to write, but if it's non-stop action, your characters and your audience will get exhausted. Pacing is super important. Let your heroes take a minute to recuperate, let your audience hit the bathrooms or take a nap or something. All emphasis is no emphasis. The high-octane adventure loses its impact if you never have the slow, subtle stages. It also doesn't really have to happen right before the big showdown. Breathers can honestly happen anywhere. This whole thing is more of a structural reminder that pacing really matters. For the return slash final reward, your adventure ends eventually, and while not all stories end back where they started, there's a melancholic victory in doing it that way. Your hero's home, but is it home anymore? Consider the ending of Lord of the Rings. They return to the Shire, but they can never go back to who they were before the adventure. For Merry and Pippin, this is good. They're stronger, taller, more badass. For Sam, he's braver and can probably get his reward of raising a family. But for Frodo, the Shire can never be his home again. He can only get the rest he deserves by leaving Middle-earth entirely. Because you can't always go home again. It's a good way to give the story a bittersweet ending, as well as explore what an ending should be like. Also, does their story even need to end? Maybe this is only the first of many adventures. Maybe even though they've finished the adventure, they now know that they can't just sit idly by when stuff goes wrong. Maybe when they return, the adventure continues. The end doesn't have to be the end. And as something extra to think about, the hero is a vague archetype, but it still has fairly rigid components, when really the hero of the story can be almost anyone. Campbell implies a strict hero character, but really the only trait that the hero needs in this structure is that they're usually naive when it comes to the unfamiliar world, which is reasonable. Look no further than Red's other trope talks to see much, much more about how you can really play with a hero character. So, there's really nothing wrong with this trope intrinsically, as it helps us understand a multitude of excellent stories from all over the world, but it shouldn't guide your writing on its own. It's similar to the rule of three in that it's more of a recurring concept than a trope people deliberately invoke, but in another similar vein to the rule of three, people tend to think it's more structurally vital than it really needs to be. You can write an excellent hero story without needing to use the hero's journey model. Just look at Captain America, which has exactly zero elements of the classic hero's journey. Tellingly, most modern versions of this model explicitly state that any number of component parts can and usually are excluded from the final product. Which is great, because with this generator that we hooked up to Campbell's grave, we can power the entire eastern seaboard with how fast he's spinning. Ultimately, it's good to be aware of it, and there's a lot of useful stuff included in it. Plus, once you know how to look for it, much like the rule of three, it is everywhere. But it doesn't dictate how you have to write, and it's nowhere near universal. So don't do anything for the sake of just doing it. Do it if it helps you tell your story.
Whoa! Dude, you would not believe the afternoon I just had.
Where have you been? I just did a whole... Never mind. What is that?
An elixir, I think. Seemed important that I return with it.
Huh.
Also, did you know this bookcase has been a foot away from the wall the whole time? So, yeah.